Welcome. Hare Krishna. Today we're going to talk about life. What's in it for you? Life. What's in it for you? What's in it for me? That's what I want to know. Hey, who's the most important person you know? It's you. Yes, we'll get to that. You're right. It isn't you, it's Krishna. But I have to work my way there, slowly. We think the most important person is ourselves, and in many ways it is. Here we are. We're in the body. We're in the body of that. We're the person inside the body. Are we that body? Same? Self, body, exact same? No. Body dies. Self continues. Soul goes on. Okay, so what is in it for us in this lifetime? I mean, why are we here? What are we doing? Did we make a wrong turn someplace? Some say we did. So let's talk about the Purusharthas. Purusharthas. What are those? Purusharthas. They are the goals of life. The four main goals of life according to the Vedas. According to the Vedic tradition and understanding. There are four main goals. Purusha means person. Person is a Purusha. An Artha is a goal or purpose. So these are goals for people. Animals? No, not exactly. People. What are they? Tell me. Dharma? Next, artha, kama, moksha. Everybody knows those. Anybody who's studied yoga, been to India, comes from India, has read the Bhagavad Gita or any other spiritual book that's written in Sanskrit, this is pretty common knowledge. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Now, Dharma, in my opinion, is the world's most wonderful word. Well, perhaps thanks to Krishna. But Dharma is, it's an amazing, amazing concept. I cannot translate it with one word in English. It's not possible. So, these are the four things that we're supposed to be undertaking or realizing in this life. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma is religion, duty, obligation. Dharma is truth, it's honesty, it's virtue, it's right action. Dharma is acting in harmony with your nature. So Dharma is your essence or very nature is your Dharma. Your nature is that which cannot be separated from you. Everybody has a nature. The thing that we enjoy about each other as we interact with each other is that we all have different natures. Makes it interesting. And if two people meet and they have a mutual friend that they both know, then they start talking about their friend and mentioning qualities or traits about that person they both know, and they begin to smile. That's him, all right. Yeah, that sounds like him. Oh, yeah, he'd do that. Don't they? Isn't that very common? So we know one's nature. Does a person's nature change in their lifetime? No. It doesn't. They may do different things. They may go down different paths, different roads. They may have different interests. They may take on different statuses or positions in life. The nature doesn't change. So dharma is also your nature, your very essence. Prabhupada gives wonderful examples of the dharma of sugar is sweetness. How do we separate sugar and sweetness? How? It's not possible. If we separate sugar and sweetness, then this white powder here is not sugar. The dharma of fire is light and heat. Always, in every situation. So your dharma is your very essence that cannot be separated from you. On the material plane, because that's where we are. We're down here on the material plane. We're not on the spiritual plane exactly. That's what we're aspiring to. On the material plane, one must first come to recognize one's own dharma. Who am I? What am I about? What is my purpose? What am I doing here? Now, I'm not talking yet about your spiritual purpose, okay? I'm talking about your material purpose at the moment. What are my inclinations? What are my qualities? What are my talents? What are my abilities? What are my God-given gifts? Haven't you been thinking about that since you were a small child? Well, if you haven't been, I don't know what you've been thinking about. Because, of course, you have. People who act in accordance, in harmony with their dharma in the world, are generally reasonably well-situated, happy people. Because they're doing something that is reflective of their nature, of their dharma. What happens when you take a job? Some of us have to take jobs. We have to be practical. We have to pay the bills. Right? Sometimes we have to take a job. We don't like the job. The job has nothing whatsoever to do with my nature. But I have to be practical. Okay. But I hope you're not practical for 30 years in your job that you don't like, or that you don't like the boss in your job. How many times have I heard that story? So we want to be able to do something that is reflective of who we are as individuals, that is reflective of our dharma, because it makes us happier, more fulfilled, and better situated. Now, dharma is religion. Religion these days is getting less and less popular, unless I miss my guess. Christian religion seems to be less and less popular. Catholicism in a country like Ireland, the Catholic country on the planet, or used to be, Catholicism, not very popular at all these days, for reasons that we won't go into. So, religion or dharma could be something, it may have nothing to do with religion as we know it. It may be that which you do religiously. Really? Yeah. Well, I never miss a match over at Croke Park. I never miss a football match. Well, there's your religion. What are you doing here? Should be over at the Euros in France today. Huh? That could be your religion. Whatever you do religious, it's not really religion. But in a sense, whatever you follow is your dharma. You're making something your dharma. Maybe it's not your dharma. Maybe drinking alcohol is your dharma. It's not real dharma. But you might do it with very focused attention, for example. So this is the concept of dharma. But dharma must lead to purification, and it must lead to a higher consciousness. Dharma means whatever you do in life must be the proverbial win-win situation. good for me, you, that is you, good for the doer, and good for everybody else. That's done. And nowadays, we have to include Mother Earth. It's got to be good for Mother Earth, too. Because many people's dharma is not good for Mother Earth. Many people's dharma is not good for animals. Animals suffer because of certain things people do. So true dharma is win-win. No one loses. That's real dharma. Okay. Because religion, and in many places, is declining, and in some places spirituality is on the rise, you can still say that, but knowing that this is Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, overall everything's kind of going down. It's becoming more degraded, less pure, more materialistic, more toward sense gratification, less toward God or spiritual practice. I think we can say this generally. Safe statement. The whole concept here is by the practice of Dharma, which means recognizing God in the higher sense. Your Dharma is good for you, good for everybody else, and takes into consideration some sort of spiritual practice. That's real dharma. That's higher dharma. Why is that important? Because dharma leads to artha, leads to kama, leads to moksha. That's the whole concept of the purusha arthas, those four goals. So your dharma, your actions in life must lead to artha. What is artha? Artha is an absolutely wonderful Sanskrit word. How many meanings does it have? 22. Exactly 22 meanings in this case. So let's discuss them all, shall we? No, we won't. I saved you there, didn't I? But purushartha, it's the same word as dharma artha, same word. So artha means goals or objectives, but in this case, artha means wealth. Wealth, money, good fortune. In a sense, it means good fortune as well. So artha means you have to be able to generate wealth and money in life. The concept is the more dharmic you are, the more spiritual you are, the more you have a connection to God, to spirit, the easier it will be to generate wealth. What does Krishna say? Bhagavad Gita. Bhuktaram yagitapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. He says that all enjoyment, yajna, all sacrifice, all tapas, all penance, whatever you give up, whatever you offer, should be done with God in mind. That's ultimately what we're coming to. Everything should be done for the satisfaction of God. Yes, it includes you in that. But when you do things for the satisfaction of God, you're practicing true dharma. Then your actions do not create reactions. All actions in the material world that are egocentric, that are based in ego, I'm doing this because I want to do it because that's what I want, carry what? Reaction. And that generates what? Karma. It generates karma. And as long as we're generating karma, we have to keep coming down, coming back to the material world to suffer or enjoy our karma. Right? So if we offer our actions to God, to Krishna, then there is no reaction. The reaction, the negative reaction, or even the positive reaction and positive actions, is removed. You can say, well, wait a second. Why would I remove my positive reaction? Because any action in the material world creates a reaction, meaning you have to come back to suffer and enjoy. Suffer and or enjoy. And that means you've got to keep coming back down into another body, lifetime after lifetime. If you want to get off the wheel of repeated birth and death, of samsara, then you have to offer your actions in such a way that you're not generating karma. Okay? So, artha means wealth. What does kama mean? Kama means desire, enjoyment, desire. And what is the number one desire that kama refers to? Have you ever heard of this book, the Kama Sutra? What is that book about?
It's about sex.
It's about sex. Pretty exciting stuff. Kama Sutra. Because sex desire, sex life, sexual indulgence is the thing that has the greatest power over us in this life. And some of you may say, well, not in my case. Okay, wonderful. But don't we say love makes the world go round? Does not procreation make the world go round? We keep on breeding and producing. So, sex life is the essence of desire. That's number one on the list. And then whatever other desires you may have. So we've come to, and then let me just cover moksha, and then I'll tell you what the state we're in, apparently. Moksha means liberation. It means getting off the wheel of repeated birth and death, samsara. Off the wheel of transmigration of the soul. That's moksha. Now, in this day and age, dharma is falling by the wayside. Fair statement, right? Artha, chasing money, chasing wealth. I want this, I want one of those, I want two of those, I want a car, I want a house, I want a new wardrobe. Not that there's something wrong with that, but if that's the be-all and the end-all, then we chase wealth, which is artha, to fulfill desire, kama, right? But we forget about dharma, and generally in the West, moksha, it's non-existent. So, in the modern society, the greatest concentration is on artha and kama. Making money, becoming wealthy, and subsequently fulfilling desire. So what's the difference between us and the animals? Here's a verse from the Hitopadesh. Ahara nidra bayamaitunang cha samanyam etat pashubir naranam dharmo hitesham adiko vishesho dharmena hina pashubi samana. Eating, sleeping, eating, ahara, nidra, sleeping. Bhaya means literally fear, but it means making a living, defending, looking after yourself, protecting yourself. That's what making a living is about. And maitunam, the sex life. So these four principles are common to both humans and animals. Right? The distinction between human life and animal life is that a person can search after God, but an animal cannot. An animal doesn't have the brain. He doesn't have the consciousness. He doesn't have the development. He doesn't have the inclination. He only has his instinct. So that's the essence of what separates us. Other than that, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that's what the animals do. That's what we do. It's the same. And if that's all we do, then our life is non-different than animal life. We just do it better. We're better at it. We do it on a higher level. All right. Therefore, a person without the urge for searching after God is actually no better than an animal. That's what the Hitopadesh says. Because there's no consciousness. So if we go back to those questions, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I here? You know, what's the purpose? Why did God put me here? How many people have asked themselves questions such as that? Most. There's a reason that we're here. Life is not meaningless, and it doesn't end at death. So that's what we have to discover. What is that reason? We all have a purpose. We all have a dharma in life, and we all have a purpose. So the four major purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Moksha means we get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. And the soul goes to the spiritual world or some level of the spiritual emancipation. Most people, even in India or who follow yogic practices, generally believe that that means merging into the oneness with God, into Brahman realization. So that your spiritual nature, your soul, merges into the great oneness of everything, the spirit, Brahmajyoti. And that is a legitimate level of God realization. But as we've talked about many times, there's a couple more levels. And the highest level that we're advocating here is what's called the supreme purushartha, or Prabhupada refers to it in this way. He says, above these four kinds of purushartas, love of God stands supreme. So beyond dharma, artha, kama, moksha is prema. No one really talks about that. You can follow many, many spiritual traditions in the West or in the East. Almost no one talks about Krishna prema, love of God. The Muslims say, Allahu Akbar. What does that mean? God is great. I think we can all agree on that. But that's just one aspect of God. One aspect. What about the rest? What about all the other qualities and traits that he has? Like the six opulences of the Godhead. So Prabhupada continues, he says, love of Godhead stands supreme. It is called Parama Purushartha, the supreme goal of life. or Purushartha. Shiromani, what is the Shiromani? Crown jewel. The crown jewel. The highest perfection of devotional service is spontaneous love of God. Why is that better? Because it's a dynamic, reciprocal, loving exchange between you and God. There are many statements in the Shastra and the scripture that say people will merge or can merge into the oneness of spirit, lose their identity, which essentially happens, and stay there for a time. It's actual moksha. It is a stage of liberation. But many of them come back down to the material world. Why? Because there's nothing going on there. There's no stimulus. There's no personal relationship. So a personal relationship is a higher relationship. You know that here in this world. When you go into relationships with people, get to know people, and there are many kinds of relationships, life is more fulfilling. You hang out with your friends, with different friends, you do different things, right? You have relationships with your parents, with your family, your siblings, your children, your spouse. These are all various kinds of relationships. Your boss, your co-workers. Some of them are wonderful. Some of them are less than wonderful. So this is the nature of all of us, is to form relationships and to maintain relationships. We're social humans generally. Yes, some of us are isolationists. We just want to be left alone. That's fine. But the vast majority of us are social. We like to hang around in groups. It's nicer. Even you want to hang around with a bunch of strangers? Yeah. It's better than being alone. Right? It's our nature. Why not include God in your nature of being social and interactive and forming relationships, lasting, loving relationships? And most people would say, I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know that was available. No one told me that before. No one suggested it to me. We're not talking about the crusty old man with a beard. That kind of concept of God, or the burning bush God. There's many concepts out there in Western religions that are very, very limited. A lot of them don't know a name. They don't know God's name. God. What's his name? He doesn't need a name. He's just God. Just be afraid. Be very afraid. Why? Why should I be afraid? He can smite you. I'm sure he can. But why should I be afraid? Who put this whole concept of love in my heart? Who put that there? My mother? Maybe. But I was born with it. What happens when a baby comes? Every single solitary baby born in this world, the first thing the child wants is what? A loving bond. Right? Isn't it the truth? Hare Krishna. a loving bond. That's what they want. And that's what the mother's job is, to provide that loving bond. This is how we're wired. This is how we are conditioned. This is our nature. So, in our lives, through various relationships, we try to form that. Whether you try to do it consciously or unconsciously, it doesn't matter. Do you remember when you were in school? Some of you are still in school. You remember when you had the teacher you really, really liked? Remember that? Oh, I just love her. Did you always pay attention and you studied and you wanted to do your best and you were so inspired by her and she was such a nice person? You loved going to school. Can you imagine? You loved going to school. Because you were in her class. Right? And you did really well. Why? Love. Love and appreciation. That's the essence. So we are interested here in discovering who God really is. What's behind the concept? What's behind the position? What's behind the status? What's behind the mystery? Is God a mystery? Yeah, if you don't know where to look. If you don't know where to look, it's a mystery. I have to smile when I read some of these scientific reports. Well, we've discovered this and we've discovered that. Good, I guess. So much of what they have newly discovered is already there in the Vedas. It's been there. India is the most advanced civilization on the planet. If you don't believe me, study. It is. It is the most comprehensive system of knowledge, philosophy, and understanding on the planet, and science on the planet, in the Vedas. It's there. Do they go to that source? No. Scientists, virtually, they ignore it. Yet there it is. I heard not long ago that the university down in Cork made this wonderful discovery. They discovered this element, or what's the term I should use for it, called curcumin, which they found in this root called turmeric, and it's an amazing blood purifier. My goodness, did you know that? Turmeric is an amazing blood purifier. Well, now we're going to isolate that element, curcumin, and we're going to produce some tablets. And we're going to save the world. Well, I thought that's very good. Isn't that progress now? Turmeric has been used in Indian cooking for how long? Thousands of years. It's in my cupboard. I use it all the time. Look at all these Indian women, big smiles on their faces. Yeah, no kidding. We all know that. Turmeric, come on. How do we understand God? There's two processes. Ascending, descending. Really? There's descending? Oh, no. God's never spoken to me. Can't be descending. Down from God to us. Down to me. He doesn't talk to me. I haven't seen him. So that means it's only ascending. I will speculate. See this? See my forehead? It means I got a good brain. See? That means I can speculate and I can understand God. No, my brain is tiny, minuscule, insignificant. I'm talking about my brain. Really, all of our brains. No offense. We cannot fully understand what and who God is because God is infinite. And He's immeasurable. He's omnipotent and omniscient and omnipresent in all the good old Om words. So if we don't use the ascending process, if we can't fully understand God by using our limited mental speculative abilities, then how will we find out? The descending process is, why don't we hear it from the source? What's the source? Well, the oldest source on the planet is the Vedas. The Vedas were spoken in Sanskrit language. Sanskrit language is known as the Devanagari. Comes from the cities of the gods. Sanskrit is a spiritual sound vibration. So, all Shastra or all scripture from the Vedas is spiritual sound vibration. And there, in the Vedas, we can get the descriptions of God in all of His forms, as avatars, as He descends, how He creates the material manifestation, what it's like in the spiritual world, and all the different planetary systems, the 14 planetary systems, and who's there and who lives there and what do they look like and what goes on there and why the people are there and what they're going through. It's all there. It's available. And the transcendental world, which we have no experience of, the spiritual world, also becomes available. We want to know that. Why would we want to go there if we know nothing about it? What would be the point? But all of this information is there. So you may say, yeah, but okay, why, if God has all these manifestations and forms and avatars, why are you choosing Krishna? Why is Krishna important? Well, Brahma, the creator, said his famous verse, Govindam Adipurusham Tam Maham Bhajami. He said, I worship Govinda, the Adipurusha. And we said at the beginning, Purusha Artha, right? The goals for persons, right? Adi Purusha means what? Original. Adi means original. Original person. First person. Original person. And in the Bhagavad Gita, after Krishna shows Arjuna the universal form, the Vishwarup, what does Arjuna say? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhava, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adi Devam, Ajam Vibhum. You are the Adi Deva, the original God. Ajam, unborn, Vibhum, all powerful. Krishna is known as the all-attractive, supreme personality of Godhead.
Wait a second.
All attractive? Yes, the most attractive. Is it so? That's what it says in the Shastra. You'll have to meet him to verify. Krish, what is the root of the word Krishna? Krish means what? To draw, to pull, to attract. Most attractive. So beautiful. Irresistible. Irresistible. Have you ever met a person in the material world, a man or a woman, depending what gender you are? You went, oh my goodness. So good looking. I can't believe it. Now, I'm exaggerating a little bit, because you probably said nothing, you probably just went. All right. You're just trying to be cool. That's what you'd be like if you met Krishna. You'd be like that, all right. At least, at the very least. We want to... I'm losing my audience.
I'm down. Sister, you got it.
You're back. I'm talking about the most attractive personality of Godhead here, my friend. Dreaming about him. There you go. On you, mate. You see, he already went into the meditation. So. Krishna is so beautiful that Cupid, who is Cupid? The god of love. Such a being, yeah? He's there in the Vedas. They don't call him Cupid. They call him Kamadeva. The god of desire. We've already talked about this word Kama, huh? The god of desire. What's the other name for him? The other common name for Cupid?
Eros.
No, I mean the Sanskrit one. Yeah, Eros, you're right. I can't think of it. Anyway. Madana. Madana means the one who drives you mad. That's what Madana means. When people fall in love, isn't that a state of madness? Come on. It's a state of madness. Don't they walk 2 inches off the ground when they're walking? Isn't it a sunny day every day, even though they live in Ireland? Now, if you can convince yourself of that, I'm really impressed. Yeah. You know, the heart goes... Yeah. But Krishna is Madana Mohan. He's the bewilderer of Cupid. Even Cupid can't keep it together when he sees Krishna. This Krishna is so beautiful. So beautiful. Krishna is the Mohan, the bewilderer of the bewilderer. Cupid's the bewilderer. Krishna's the bewilderer of the bewilderer. I mean, how bewildered can we be? The idea is to enter into a deep, powerful, eternal, loving relationship with Krishna. So Prabhupada very kindly came to the West and presented the whole concept of Krishna to us. And the early devotees in the West, when Prabhupada came in 65, Prabhupada kept going on about the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said, well, maybe you shouldn't use the word Krishna. Krishna consciousness. No, no, maybe you shouldn't do that. You should just say God consciousness. It's better. Prabhupada says, but no one knows what God is. No one knows who God is. We are here to teach them, to inform them, so they know. How can they go into a personal relationship, a loving reciprocal relationship, with someone that they don't know who he is? How? This is very difficult. Krishna. That's he. The blue guy. So that's what we advocate, is developing this love of God. Why? Because it's more joyful than anything. And since you're wired for love anyway, what could be higher than a loving relationship to God? You, believe me, you've been there and tried all the rest, okay? You can say, yeah, well, I have many good loving relationships. Okay, I'm pleased to hear that. Problem is, every single one of them has come to an end. No, no. I'm still with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Until when? Eternally? No. No matter how loving and wonderful your relationship may be, death comes and it ends. Something wrong there. We don't want death. We don't want old age. We don't want disease. We don't want suffering. We don't want repeated birth and death. But that's what we get. Something's wrong there, my friends. So we, if we're souls, and souls are eternal, which we are, then what is our greatest dharma, our greatest benefit? Life. What's in it for you? This is what's in it for you. Your greatest benefit is to enter into a loving reciprocal relationship with Krishna. You want to know about, you may say, I don't know much about him. Well, there are so many books available that describe Krishna in every possible detail. All of his pastimes, all of his histories, everything he's done, all of the different forms, manifestations, and avatars that the Godhead has taken through the millennia. It's all there. We encourage you to read, to study, to learn, to enter into this rasa, this relationship to God. Do you have to give up your current relationships? No, not necessarily. But let me point this out. Those of you who have gone through a spiritual journey, perhaps an awakening, perhaps a gradual awakening, perhaps an epiphany. All of a sudden the lights went on. Oh my God, I've never seen the truth like this before. Those of you who are on a spiritual path, and over time your consciousness has expanded and increased, your realization has expanded and increased. Have you ever noticed that your friends fall away? Anyone? I'm the only one. No? Have you ever noticed that your friends, your old friends, not necessarily anything wrong with them, but they fall away? They fall by the wayside. Either of their own accord, or you don't pick up the phone and call them anymore. You notice that? Why? Don't you like them? No, I still like them. Because your consciousness has changed. It's shifted. And when people are on a lower consciousness than you, you mean there's lower and higher states of consciousness? Of course. And when people are on a lower state of consciousness than you, you will be less interested in spending time with them. This is not a judgment call. This is not a discrimination against them. It's just that we used to have so many things in common, and we don't anymore. Right? That's what happens as your consciousness expands. You become more particular about who you want to hang with. It's true. I want to hang out with the Adi Purush, the original personality of Godhead. Krishna, in case you don't know, is a really fun guy. His whole thing is fun. He runs around in the forest, bare feet. Yeah? But he can't afford shoes. Bare feet. Go to India. It's less now. People walk around with bare feet in India. Why? Because your feet are meant to be in contact with Mother Earth. Yeah. Do I recommend on the streets of Dublin? He runs around, plays with his friends, he plays his flute, takes care of the cows. I mean, he lives an idyllic lifestyle. And a lifestyle of purity and innocence and sweetness. You know this verse? Maduram maduram vaparasya vibhor. Maduram maduram vadanam maduram. Madugandhi mridu smita metha dho. Maduram, 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 maduram. So, it says that honey is sweet. Krishna's body is sweet. His face is even sweeter. But his smile is the sweetest of all. So this is really innocence, innocent, pure, sweet love. Like children have. Huh? This is what children are like before their egos develop, before they get influenced by the world. That's the kind of loving relationship that is available for us. Return to innocence. Return to that simplicity. We are all overburdened by so much, so many concerns and pain and suffering and sorrow, problems. And this happened and that happened. They did this, they said that. I can't believe. How am I going to pay this? Huh? Return to the innocence. That's what we're recommending. Take shelter of Krishna. Just take shelter. What does he say? Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami mashuja. Give up all your dharmas. Sarva dharman parityaja. Give up all your dharmas. Remember what we talked about at the beginning? All your dharmas. All whatever you think your religion is. Whatever you do religiously, give it up. Come to me. Just come to me. I will deliver you. Moksha Yisham, I will deliver you. Mashujah, don't worry. Don't worry. I'll take care of everything. That's his statement. That's his guarantee. But what's the price? You have to surrender. Yeah. You have to surrender what? You surrender the fact that you think you know everything? You have to surrender ego? You have to surrender self-importance? Mostly you have to surrender fear. Your fear.
I can't let go. I can't let go. What will happen to me?
Let go. Let go. Find out. Find out. See what happens. That's the highest dharma. Krishna, prema, love of God. Thank you for your kind attention. Questions? It all went in. Perfect. Ishwar?
Death is 100%
everything. Yep, you can be assured. If you took birth, it will be followed by a death in the material world. Material body, you know, they're trying to develop all kinds of ways to restore, maintain youth, deliver the fountain of youth. There's all kinds of research being done, and, you know, now they're doing stem cells, stem cell treatments. That's the new wonder drug and hyperbolic chambers and... Okay. All right. And, of course, we can slice and dice your face in any way, a number of ways. We can give you Botox. Huh? Do any of them prevent death? No. Not one. Not one. You might buy a little time. Not much. Any other questions?
Are you going to know more about the Vedas? Can you read about them more?
Yes. You see these books, and there's many, many more books. If you talk to Manu, we recommend you read the Bhagavad Gita as it is, first and foremost. That gives you the best basis. I read the Bhagavad Gita. I always tell this story. 1972, summer, and I had a little inflatable dinghy. And I'd row out to the middle of the lake in my dinghy in the morning in the sunshine, July. And I'd read the Bhagavad Gita in the middle of the lake. Did that a few times. But I remember, and then I'd come in, I'd row in, and I'd sit on the grass next to the lake, and I'd read the Bhagavad Gita. And that summer, my life changed forever. There was no going back. The knowledge went in. The heart opened. And I thought, oh my goodness. I got to get to meet this Krishna guy. I have to meet him. let's go. So this is 2016 minus 1972. I don't know how many years is it. It's a few. 45. Where has the time gone? It's gone like that. I'm still. My goal hasn't changed. Oh, have I never gotten diverted a little bit from the... Oh, yeah. I have. Guess what? I'm human. I have been diverted. And I just turn the boat and get right back on the right course. You know, that's all you do. You get off course, get back on course. Don't beat yourself up about it. It's okay. It's all right. You're entitled to make mistakes. You're human. It's okay. Krishna only sees your service. Krishna does not see your disservice, your non-service. He doesn't care. When you're busy in your illusion, whatever your favorite illusion might be, you all have one. When you're busy with your favorite illusion, Krishna doesn't care. He's not paying attention. He wants your love, your devotion. That's what he sees. That's what he remembers. When you have a relationship with a person, your time spent together is what you remember. No? And the things you've done together and the exchanges that you've had, this is what makes your friendship and your connection. And you say, yeah, but my friend, whom I love, has a gambling problem. Well, do you gamble with... No, I have nothing to do with it. Well, maybe your friend does have a gambling problem, but you don't care about that. You overlook that. It's neither here nor there, because it has nothing to do with your connection to your friend whom you love. Correct? Yeah, everybody's got this, that. Don't worry about it. Don't blow it out of proportion. This too shall pass. Get close to God. Get closer to God. These other things, my friends, will fall away. These anarthas, here's the word again, artha. Values. Anartha, things that are have no value, have no real worth, they'll fall away. Bad habits, they'll fall away.
I have a question. How did you bring you back to a few years in your life? I remember one of your lectures probably 1 year ago. You mentioned about when you became a devotee of Krishna and you were supposed to go to maybe America to go regularly to read about them. And your parents were not happy about it. And I just want to know about how many years did it take to get them satisfied with your act, and were they satisfied at all, and like how did you see your parents for that act, and like did you make them happy or
they... Okay, he's asking me, he said he remembers a lecture I gave some time ago, a few years ago. And I said that my parents were dead against my taking to the spiritual path of Krishna consciousness at the tender age of 22. They were against it. And he's asking, did I resolve that conflict with them at some point in time? And were they okay with it? And the answer is... no. It was never resolved. By the time I was 26, I realized that my parents would never understand me, would never appreciate my actions, would never know who I really am in my essence. I might add, these were my adoptive parents, because I was given up for adoption upon coming out of the womb. I spent the first 6 months of my life in an orphanage, and then I was adopted by my adoptive parents. God bless them. And they did not get me. So I separated myself from them physically and emotionally. It's not that I wasn't in their lives, but I was 1,500 miles away for the rest of their lives. They got to see my children from time to time. And that's how our lives went. And we just didn't talk about it. You could talk about the weather and sports and, you know, those kind of things, politics. My father died when I was 51 years old. And I returned to Canada to bury my father. And at that time, my mother said to me, "Your life has been a complete waste. Your life has been useless. You have done nothing of any value. All you've done your entire life is silly things. Look at you. You have nothing." That's what she said to me. Did it affect me? No. Because I already knew that she would never understand me. Never. Most of us are waiting for one of our parents to, when will he get me? I'm going to do this. I'm going to show him. I'm going to prove myself. And then he'll love me. Then he'll praise me. How many of us are doing that? I knew that would never happen. And I let it go at 26. So when she said those words to me at 51, which were very cruel, by the way, it had no effect. We have to detach ourselves from people and things that do not affirm you. Sometimes a spiritual path is a very lonely path. And it, believe me, it's much harder than a material path. It's much harder. And you know, you want the love and support of your family, especially Indian people. I know what the culture is like. Believe me, I do. But I chose Krishna. Am I sorry I did? No, I'm not. Look, here I sit, having wasted my entire life, with a big smile on my face, with a room full of wonderful people. I can feel the love coming. I can feel it. Did I do the right thing?
Yeah.
Rachel.
Do you think clients and the spiritual world will start to get closer? I spoke with a guy in Harvard who is dealing with the origins of the world. He's an astronomer, is that right?
Astronomer, yeah.
And he was looking at all the planets. And he did a speech saying about all the people in science and, you know, looking at all the planets are actually saying that intimacy is the biggest thing, and they're trying to get their heads around that. So maybe...
I'm sorry, what is the biggest
intimacy,
thing?
Intimacy.
Intimacy.
Which I was very surprised that these scientists would be super geeky people, in the sense that they're, you know, very specialist knowledge, were actually saying how the planets rotate, that intimacy is the biggest thing. So do you think maybe there might be a breakthrough in this lifetime that science and spirituality might actually fall... Kind of
well, that's an excellent question. I never thought scientists would use the word intimacy, so that's something. That's an easy question to answer. It depends on the consciousness of the scientists. if the scientist's consciousness actually rises up to spiritual, and there are scientists whose consciousness has done just that. It's not like there aren't any. There are. And some of them are my godbrothers. You know, they just, I think they're deceased now, the original crew, but, you know. If it depends, you know. But the consciousness has to rise up, you know. It's like telling somebody that killing animals is not good. It's wrong. Animals have feelings. They are entitled to their lives. They're entitled to their destiny. They're entitled to live out their life. You shouldn't kill them. And they say, well, I don't believe you. You know, and well, we have to eat animals. Okay, so you can argue, and, you know, sometimes it goes nowhere. But one day that person then has a higher realization or revelation, their consciousness expands, and they go, oh, yeah, okay, I see it now. I see it. I would never do that. I would never kill an animal. The understanding of compassion for other beings now has entered into their hearts. So that's what it depends on. Realization, revelation. Mona, are we good? Thank you, my friends, for your kindness, for your kind attention. May Krishna bless you always.